This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Coming to you from parts unknown to talk about wrestling from yesteryear to today, it's the Podcast of Doom with your hosts, Scott Keith and Brian Bayless.
Welcome to the Flaming Trainwreck that is Scott Keith's Podcast of Doom. I will be your host today, Scott. I also own the website at blogofdoom.com. I'll be joined tonight by my compadre, Brian Bayless, who does an insane amount of work for me. And in fact, this is the first time that we are contacting each other in real life, sort of, if you can consider this real life. Brian, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great, Scott. Nice to finally talk to you.
Yeah, I know. It's weird. Like, you do like so much for the website, and yeah, we've never really had a chance to sit down and chat before, so it's kind of cool. Yeah.
It'll be fun.
So what's going on tonight over there?
Oh, not too much. Got home from work about an hour ago, a little later than planned, but I'm good tonight.
Good.
After this, no real plans.
Yeah, well, hopefully everybody's excited to finally that I'm getting into the podcasting world here on my own instead of just leeching off the heat from Place to Be Nation, as I usually do here. It's actually been in the works for a while now, I think, that we've wanted to try something like this, you know, leaving money on the table and all that. But
exactly. Can't do that.
Yeah, can't do that. No, exactly. So I'm really glad to be in the swing of it and giving it a go here. And, yeah, hopefully it won't be a total disaster. So
absolutely.
I think anything above that we'll consider as a win then. So, what do we got going on tonight in the world of wrestling, I guess, would be the first thing that we want to...
So, one big story is Brock Lesnar, who we found out will not be disciplined by the WWE for failing drug tests at UFC 200. TMZ Sports actually heard from someone from the WWE who told them that the talent wellness program does not apply to part-time performers such as Brock Lesnar. So, his match with Randy Orton will go on as planned. And, you know, as a
big slap in the face
to any full-time performer, they see this. I don't know why you'd want to be a full-time performer then. If you're over any amount, you just want to be a part-time guy and get juiced to the gills and do what you want and you'll be fine.
Well, yeah, exactly. Like it's kind of always been the double standard of wrestling that way. I guess we shouldn't be terribly surprised. What I'm kind of surprised about actually is that kind of the reaction that he's been getting from fans in the wrestling world. You would think that this is the kind of thing that people would be all over him about, but it seems like there's kind of the reaction from people is, you know, well, it's kind of expected. It's like, well, yeah, I know, yeah, he's a wrestler, obviously he's on juice, and it's no big deal. It's more Roman Reigns, I think, who's been kind of been getting crap from the WWE universe, so to speak, you know, for something that's even, I'd say if Roman does turn out to be something minor like Adderall, you know, they don't reveal it, but, you know, it seems to be what the rumor is going around.
Right.
It's almost like, you know, Roman's getting extra shit from people when he almost shouldn't be. His is almost more of a, you know, just a minor mistake thing like he was saying it was, whereas Brock should be the one that people should, you know, really kind of be outraged about, and it seems to be kind of the reverse. It's kind of a strange situation.
It really is. I mean, Brock's getting no repercussions from this whatsoever, and Roman's getting eviscerated, and... You know, there was a rumor before that the SummerSlam main event would be Reigns versus Rollins, and that's off the books now. So I don't know what they're going to do with Roman heading to SummerSlam. I have no idea. He did say he wanted to face the winner of Rollins and Finn Balor for the title, but if that happens, who knows? But yeah, Reigns really got shafted here. I'd be really pissed off about him, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and you don't really want to mess with the Samoan family like that. I mean, they've run afoul of Offa and Sika a couple of times here during the Roman Reigns push, and you got to think they're running out of credit with the Samoans there pretty soon. Like, I don't know. If I was Vince McMahon, I wouldn't want to be meeting Sika in a dark alley right now, personally, with all the stuff that's been going on before Roman.
Not at all. You already pissed him off at WrestleMania 31, too.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe this is the way they finally build up the babyface sympathy heat for Roman Reigns. I think that's the only thing I can think of, is that they're going to treat him so badly on TV that people might actually start to feel sorry for him in real life.
it'd be worth a shot at this point. Because I don't know if they're going to back off on making him the top guy. They're probably going to cool him off a little bit. But as far as a full heel turn, I don't know if that's going to. I don't really think they're going to do it. They would have done it already, I believe.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's actually, Dave and Brian were saying on the radio show the other night that kind of the best way to go about it now would be at SummerSlam. If Roman comes out and kind of screws Finn Balor over and lets Seth Rollins win the Universal Championship, and that might finally turn him into a heel possibly. But yeah, I got to think after 2 years, if they haven't done it by now, then this is probably not going to be the time for it then.
And that's a good point, too. If they don't do it at SummerSlam, they're probably never going to do it.
But yeah. More importantly, though, yeah. But Brock certainly facing repercussions in UFC, though, it sounds like. And also, it sounds like Mark Hunt's pretty pissed off about the whole situation as well. For those who haven't heard about that, too, Mark Hunt completely went off on UFC and Dana White, basically saying that he should get the entire purse from the fight, which is kind of hilarious in itself. But this is the second time around that Mark Hunt's been kind of screwed over by fighting somebody and then turning out that they were drugged up the whole time. And although you have to think with Brock as well, this is the first time he's got caught, but you have to think that it's been going on for longer than this.
Absolutely. He's wrestled about 19 matches in 3 years, I think, is what I saw today. So they don't. If you're wrestling part-time, you're fine in WWE. You can do what you want, really. That's what we learned here.
Yeah, well, Triple H has already proven that.
It
kind of casts another double standard as well, because what everybody's brought up is, you know, Billy Gunn, who did, you know, whatever in out-of-competition thing, and he got fired as well. And as a full-time, like, he's an employee. He's not actually, you know, a contracted wrestler. So he shouldn't even have been tested or subject to the wellness policy. So it's really huge double standard on their part.
And I wonder if they had not promoted the Orton-Lesnar main event at SummerSlam before this happened, what would they do with Lesnar at SummerSlam? Would they even have him in a match at this point, you think?
Yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of it is because they were a little bit backed into a corner on it, because they had done so much promotion on Orton versus Lesnar, so they kind of gave themselves a backdoor out on it. And they said, oh, well, you know, run. We would punish him, but he's not subject to the wellness policy, so we're not going to follow up on it. But, I mean, it's the wellness policy is a joke anyway. I mean, everybody knows that. It's not like people are, you know, expecting that they would ever follow up on most of these things that they do. Like, the Adam Rose thing was about the first time in forever, it seems like, that somebody was legitimately caught for doing something on a drug test. So, you know, before that, it was like, what, Hornswoggle, like 3 years ago?
Yeah, and Hornswoggle's thing was he couldn't take the test in time. He was at home and he couldn't urinate in time, so they got a violation because of that.
I hate it when that happens. Although if I was the wellness policy guys, I personally would not be brave enough to be the one going to Saskatchewan to, you know, give Brock the piss test like that. I mean, I was knocking on his door and asking him to pee in a cup, and he said no. I'd just be like, oh, okay, well, I'll see you later then. So, yeah, I mean, like, you know, USADA, they're professionals at this. You know, they deal with these big, huge guys all day long, and, you know, stick them with needles and get them to pee in cups and that kind of thing. You know, the wellness guys, they're the ones intimidated by MVP. So, I mean, obviously they're not particularly tough guys. So I think that's what needs to happen. And they need to beef up their security and then the wellness policy and, you know, make sure these guys are following through.
And I did like Randy Orton's little jab at Lesnar at the pay-per-view, despite the fact they created a loophole to prevent him from getting fired.
That was quite the irony there, wasn't it?
Well, yeah, and I guess Dave Meltzer said that was actually a scripted line.
Yeah. It was also really funny, too, when the crowd was like, when he gave the line and the crowd, you know, just this gasp of horror that Randy Orton would bring that subject up. It's as if, you know, this was something off the cuff that, you know, wrestlers are suddenly allowed to improvise and come up with these great lines on their own. I mean, it was a great line. I mean, you know, I laughed at it. But, yeah, the irony of Randy Orton being the guy to complain about somebody else being on drugs is – but he is a family guy now. So, you know, he's happy-go-lucky Randy, right? You know, he's got the wife and kids and mowing the lawn and hurt his back taking out of the garbage. So, you know, he's probably a lot more easygoing now. He doesn't, you know, poop in his neighbor's gym bags or anything like that, right?
Absolutely.
He's a good guy now.
He's probably going to be a part-time guy soon, too, so he has, you know, completely nothing to worry about after that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, once you go less than full time, then you don't have to worry about it. You can shoot up whatever you want, and so it's all fine because you're not part of the wellness policy. So does that mean Chris Jericho is not subject to the wellness policy? I wonder. Like, where's the cutoff here for what's a full time and a part time guy?
It'd be great if you could see actually what kind of contracts the performers have right now, because I don't know if he's a full time guy. I think he's.
Yeah, because he kind of seems to do whatever he wants, really. And I mean, anybody who wears light up jackets and scarves has got to be doing something, you have to think.
Yeah, he's a known partier too, so who knows what he's really doing.
That's right, Jericho guy. We've got to look into him. All right, moving on. SmackDown, which unfortunately have not had a chance to watch on Hulu yet because I don't subscribe to cable anymore. But apparently the honeymoon is over a little bit. According to the ratings here, it dropped by quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, they lost almost 500,000 viewers.
Yeah, that's not good. I guess we can discuss SmackDown. We can discuss SmackDown now if you want to. But
sure.
I don't know. Did you watch the show? Watch the show last night?
I did. I actually even put a review up for Place to Be Nation for it, and it was not a good show. I mean, overall, it was just a mediocre episode. But for the first show of the supposed new era, and you want to promote the show. Something for exciting and fresh. It was none of that. Raw beat that in every department. And what SmackDown did was introduce Alexa Bliss and Carmella in a pathetic women's segment. Each one came out interrupting each other, and no one looked good out of it. The main event.
Yeah, go ahead.
The main event was okay, but it paled in comparison to the the multi-man matches on Raw, and Dolph Ziggler, of all people, pinned AJ Styles to face Dean Ambrose for the title at SummerSlam.
Yeah, that was a strange one. I guess the way that they're thinking about it, if I can get into the head of Vince McMahon here for a second, is that number one match at SummerSlam, I guess, is Brock Lesnar against Randy Orton. So that's, you have your main event. Then you have the Universal Championship match, with Finn Balor against Seth Rollins, because the Raw guys are always going to be promoted as the big thing. Obviously, AJ Styles and John Cena are still doing something at SummerSlam, so they're going to be number two or number three, somewhere in that thing. So, I mean, anyway, they go with it. Dean Ambrose is going to be number four guy on the pecking order on that card. Like, he's automatically halfway down the show. So I don't know, maybe the thinking was that they didn't want to waste the world title match on somebody meaningful. It's a weird thing. Like, I guess even if you throw like a rematch of Charlotte and Sasha Banks into there, then that pushes it down a little bit further, because there's going to be a lot of interest in that match. So I don't know, perhaps the thinking is that if it's already going to be a mid-card match, then they'll just treat it like a mid-card match and book them against a mid-carder. But yeah, it's typically, if you're going to promote somebody from the mid card and talk about breaking the glass ceiling and all that crap, then you should probably push them beforehand so people don't look at them as something other than mid card jobber for a life. I mean, I don't have personal problems with Dolph Ziggler being pushed back up to the main event like that. I mean, it's fine. I haven't seen a really great Dolph Ziggler match in a very long time. But I mean, it's just strange out of nowhere thing. Like, it's. Same kind of thing with they were trying to duplicate the Finn Balor push with Apollo Crews, it seemed like, on SmackDown as well. And obviously Apollo Crews is no Finn Balor. So it's just it makes SmackDown look like the B show, which, obviously we knew it is, but Vince McMahon's under a lot of pressure to deliver ratings for this, and it's kind of strange to be like first show out of the gate and already it's being, shoved down to the number two status again like that.
Yeah, it absolutely came off like the B show to me as well. Even the talent, it's not even distributed across both rosters, and that's going to be an issue going forward too. You got to build up a lot of guys on Smack. I mean, they're really going to focus on Corbin and Cruz, it looks like, based on the main event. But they're nowhere close to being ready to. There's a formidable threat on that show, and Corbin's feud with Ziggler was just terrible. I mean, that was a feud that was relegated to pre-shows, for crying out loud. So they have a big depth issue on SmackDown.
Yeah, I mean, it's another thing too. Yeah, like Dolph Ziggler, if it was something where they were prepping to to build an empire like that, then yeah, he should have been doing something other than doing pre-show 50-50 booking with Baron Corbin in the months leading up to this. And just, it's very strange out of nowhere choice, like, to do. Like, you think even somebody like, you know, try to duplicate the Finn Balor thing and push somebody new out of the gate, like, you know, like an Apollo Crews, and, you know, have him do the job, or Baron Corbin. I think that might have been even a better idea, because it feels like at this point Dolph Ziggler is such damaged goods that there's really not much more they're going to be able to do with him there. Or even like, you know, like Alberto Del Rio. I think he's on SmackDown. I don't know. Anyway, he's somewhere. But, you know.
Yeah, he's on SmackDown.
He's on SmackDown. Okay, yeah. So somebody like Del Rio, even like that, who's, you know, also desperately in need of rehabilitation and has a bit of a name, and, you know, it would be something fresh that they haven't really done before. So that's just a very, very strange choice, and makes some of the booking on Battleground make even less sense than it did before, I think.
And also on SmackDown, we saw that Rhino is back in the WWE, and they did a video package promoting the return of Shelton Benjamin.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm pretty excited about Shelton Benjamin, actually. I don't even know what he's been doing recently, but he's always I think, actually, Shelton Benjamin palling around with American Alpha would be a good combination, I think. They would make a good, like, good three-man team there, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he's been in Japan recently, and he's supposedly been okay, but I haven't seen any of his work in a while. And it's also bringing back more older talent from the past. I mean, Curt Hawkins is confirmed as being on the SmackDown brand shortly, according to PW Insider. Mm-hmm. It looks like they're bringing Jinder Mahal back.
Oh, I know. I want to bring that one up as well. Yeah. Jinder Mahal. Now, all they need is we're only one man away from the grand reunion of 3MB. Because, you know, everything that was more than 6 months old is suddenly awesome again, apparently, in their mind. So.
And poor Drew Galloway.
Drew Galloway, I know. Poor Jinder Mahal and Heath Slater are still employed, but Drew Galloway, you know, is the one who gets jettisoned out to TNA. Poor bastard.
And he's been phenomenal in Evolve. I haven't seen much of his TNA work, but Galloway, he's been great. They really dropped the ball on him.
Yeah, I don't get that one at all. It's like they groomed him to be a top star, and then they're the ones who kind of dropped him and expected him to be something that he wasn't. And then, you know, they fired him for not living up to the standard that they created for him. It's just really, really weird. And I don't know. He has the look to be a top guy, and obviously they had that in their minds before. And it might just be a case of, you know, Vince McMahon gets tired of his toys after a few months, because we've seen it happen many times before with him.
And also looks like they're talking about other people possibly returning, like Melina, MVP, Carlito, and Tommy Dreamer.
Oh, well, if they bring Melina back, then that'll get Batista as well, possibly.
That's right. He'll come back.
He'll come back.
Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy 2. You can come back to the SmackDown. So what do you think about these guys that are rumored to come back? Do you think they can actually make something with any of them? Do you think there's just going to be depth on the roster for other guys to beat?
Melina, I don't know. She's getting – I have to say, she's – considering the standard of, you know, the women's division, she's a little older, I think, than they'd be looking at for somebody. And they're like that. And she was kind of part of that – The division in that kind of strange transitional period when Kelly was the big star, when they weren't really high level wrestlers like they are now. Well, I guess, you know, not high level wrestlers, but, you know, better wrestlers than they were before. So she's kind of part of that minor eye candy period. I don't know if she can hang with the other ones now. Jinder Mahal, obviously future world champion, you know, right, written all over him right there.
There's a lot of potential. Yeah, he's good. He's gonna tear it up.
Yeah, yeah. He's fine. He's a fine mid card guy. Yeah, like Shelton Benjamin. Shelton was always a guy who was just kind of held back by, you know, his own work ethic. He was somebody who would have great matches with the right people, but if it wasn't the right person, then he didn't care. I think it'd probably be the same way. I can't imagine him getting pushed much higher than he was before. But hey, good luck to him. Right, he's a good worker. I think he might be a little bit too old for the position that they want to put him in, but, you know, maybe he can pull it off. Maybe they can bring back Charlie Haas, too. I don't even know what he's doing. But
I think Charlie left wrestling, but he might come back. Who knows?
Well, him and Don Marie were off doing, like, the domestic life, I think it is now, if I'm not mistaken. But, what other names was there that we were discussing?
Carlito.
Carlito. Oh, my God. Seriously. Well, as if the Shining Stars weren't in a bad enough position as it is. I don't know. I can't see Carlito coming. Again, Carlito, much like Shelton Benjamin, if you think his motivation is the problem, then Carlito is just like 10 times worse. Man, I guess they could put him with the Shining Stars and make get another six-man team to mix in there with like the Wyatts and everything like that. But God, that's I think the train has sailed on him. I don't know why he'd want to bother wasting more time putting him in there, because you know he's not going to come in there and be a jobber. Like if you bring him in there and ask him to start, you know, doing jobs to mid-carders, then he'll be out of there pretty quick probably. And certainly he's not going to be able to be motivated enough to be pushed to the top again like they tried to. So that one just feels like that would be a complete waste of time. He'd probably be in for a couple of weeks and then go back to Puerto Rico, be a 25-time universal champion or whatever it is at this point that he's been. But Carlito's been rumored forever. Like there's been lots of times I've heard when they've been trying to bring him back, and it's never really materialized yet.
And it seems like every Royal Rumble you hear, Carlito and Shelton Benjamin are going to return to Royal Rumble. It never happens.
So. Yeah. Well, you know, there is a vignette now for Shelton Benjamin, so at least it's
so he'll be coming back at least.
Yeah, he'll be coming back at least. I like the Rhino edition though. I mean, it's much like NXT. I don't think there's any illusions that he's coming back to be like, you know, world champion or anything like that. I mean, he's a good mid-card guy, and you know he knows he's going to come in there and get beaten by some people, but you know he's pretty over, and he's somebody who has a good attitude and everybody likes. So I think that's a fine one. That's the kind of thing that they'd be adding a lot of, from what I understand. You know, just a lot of you know those mid-card names basically who are around in the Attitude Era can still go. So you know people know them and like them, and it's fine.
And the Cruiserweights, it looks like they're trying to sign several guys from the Cruiserweight Classic. The PW Torch last week reported they reached out and signed Kota Ibushi and Grand Metalik, who is Mascara Dorada and CMML. And it looks like they also offered contracts to TJ Perkins, Cedric Alexander, Noam Dar, and Akira Tozawa.
Tozawa is awesome. I love Tozawa. Yes.
He's great. It looks like, according to Pro Wrestling Sheet, that these guys were... would like to report to WWE in September or October. Have you seen much of the Cruiserweight Classic yet?
Well, I mean, I watched the first two episodes. I haven't really been doing play-by-play on it because it doesn't really lend itself well to that. And it's just kind of like, you know, it's a nice breezy thing. I was doing a little bit for the sporting news, and I found myself typing, oh, this was a good four-minute match, you know, a few times, and then realized, yeah, it's not something really, because, you know, it's not like there's a lot of familiarity with the guys on it, unfortunately. So it's a real fun thing to watch. It's, I have to say, you know, like the announcing on it is fantastic because Vince McMahon's not involved in it. And Daniel Bryan and Morrowind Owl are just allowed to kind of say whatever they want and, you know, just speak their minds and call it like they want to. And it's pretty fantastic in that regard. It's just nice fun show to watch. But yeah, there's been a lot of really impressive guys in there so far. Like you can tell they're trying to make the most of their time here, and the Full Sail crowd's kind of the perfect crowd to put them out there because they're willing to give them a chance and they're not going to turn anybody. And you know, Kota Ibushi pretty much made himself a star in one show. He was fantastic, I thought. And obviously I haven't watched tonight's yet. I don't know when exactly it debuts on the network here tonight, but I'll probably end up watching that as well. And, yeah, it's a show I look forward to, basically. And I don't know about putting him on Raw, though. That seems like a really bad idea to me, but who knows?
Yeah, I thought that would fit the SmackDown identity better than it would Raw, but it is what it is, I guess.
You know, it's a really, really strange decision there, but I mean, I guess it's, you know, in Vince's mind, Raw is still the flagship, so anything new and shiny has to go on Raw now. I don't get it, but hey, it's not my promotion.
Place of Nations, Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceofNations.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports covered too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClune Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's blog, A Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, welcome back. Thanks for checking out our new show. You can find Scott Keith's podcast, A Doom, at placetobenation.com and by subscribing to the Place to Be podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. My show shares a podcast feed with other great programs like the aforementioned Place to Be podcast, Clotheslines and Headlines, PTBN's Main Event, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast. You can learn all about these programs at placetobenation.com by clicking on the podcast logo at the right side. In addition, there's a number of regular written series going on, including Ron's SmackDown Reviews from Brian, Justin and Scott's Vintage Vault Refreshes, and PTBN's Excellent Network Adventure. Also, don't forget to check out the PWO PTBN Podcast Network for hardcore wrestling shows like Between the Sheets, Exile on Bad Street, Where the Big Boys Play, This Week in Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, At the Garden, and the Titans of Wrestling. But hey, there's more than just wrestling at Place to Be Nation. Be sure to check out PTBN POP for comics and pop culture audio, and check back daily for cool features on the site, like the Seinfeld Rewatch, comics reviews, and the Wednesday Walk Around the Web, and more. So yeah, PTBN, one of my favorite sites. I hang out there. I scope a lot of good writers off there, so that's great. Thanks a lot to Justin Rosero, of course, for hosting the podcast here. Okay, so moving on. This past Sunday here was Battleground, the WWE Network special, or pay-per-view, or whatever you want to consider it now. And I thought it was actually a very good show compared to what I thought it was going to be. Been kind of somewhat disappointed in them recently. We knew it was going to be a complete lame duck show from them leading into SummerSlam, kind of the July doldrums. But it turned out to be quite an entertaining show, I thought, and well worth the $9.99 that I pay for the network every month. We'll go over it a little bit now, I guess.
Sure. I thought it was a great show, too. I thought the only down spot was that Miz Darren Young match. The whole thing was pretty crappy, if you ask me. But everything else I thought was great on the show.
It was quite the down spot, yeah.
Yeah, it was not too good at all. But what do you think about the main event and how it went about that with Ambrose pinning Reigns?
It's fairly surprising, actually. I mean, obviously, that was kind of our first sign that Reigns was really seriously in the doghouse, was doing his second job in a row on pay-per-view like that. I mean, obviously Seth Rollins could have done it just as easily, but you know, they really seem to be sending a message out to Reigns on that one, which is, you know, I thought the obvious way to go about it would have been something like a disputed finish or something crazy like that, but no, instead he just got pinned straight out. As far as the match itself goes, I think in a vacuum, it was really quite good. The problem that I had, and I feel like a lot of other people like Brian Alvarez and stuff had with the show by that point, was that it was the pay-per-view itself was very needlessly long, I thought. It was really, really kind of drawn out. They've gone now from basically a 2 hour and 40 minute standard pay-per-view to just, you know, going whenever the hell they want. This one ended up being 3 hours and 20 minutes. And I mean, you know, I'm old now. I have a child. I have a cat. I just want to, you know, watch my 2.5 hour show and, you know, do the write up for the blog and then go to bed, because, you know, some of us like to spend time with our families, and they're kind of aiming these shows now towards the teenage audience who's, you know, big with their Twitters and their Pokemon Go and stuff like that. And they have all the time in the world to sit and watch 15 hours of wrestling in a row on the weekend. And the target audience is like, you know, old folks like me, and I don't have that time. And I just want to watch it and be done with it. And so by that point, it'd been entertaining a couple of hours in the show. And then we hit the Darren Young segment, and it was just like, I'm just kind of done. I want to go to bed now. And there's still like tons and tons of time left on the show. So it felt like, to me, like the crowd had kind of checked out by that point. So that was one thing that really hurt the match, I felt like. The other thing is the thing that I touched upon in the rant itself was the whole Roman Reigns hatred thing. It's like, before it was cute. It was kind of like, you know, a wannabe John Cena thing where, you know, they want to turn him babyface, but the crowd's some's kind of booing him and some's kind of cheering him. And, you know, it was made for kind of a cool dynamic when they're turning on stuff before. And that was fine. But I mean, now it's just really killing these matches. Like, people, there is no Roman Reigns support section anymore, it seems like, at these shows. Like, everybody hates him now, and people are rejecting everything, and it's just gives the matches this really weird flow and dynamic, where Roman Reigns is booked and trying to work as a babyface, and people want him to be heel, and that doesn't work, and then people just kind of tune out the match whenever he's involved, and just want him to go away like he's X-Pac or something. And I mean, it's nothing against Roman as a worker. Like, you know, Roman's a good worker, but he's so handcuffed by this now, and he doesn't have the freedom just to go with it and work as a heel and make a more entertaining match. And I don't know, it's just really wrecking the matches for me, I find. I find it so distracting when, you know, WWE has to turn down the sound around him and get these guys to work, you know, super heel to try to make him look like a baby face in comparison and stuff. And it's just doesn't work for me anymore. Like, they got to get him out of these main events if they're going to, you know, keep him as a, if they want to try to keep pushing him as a baby face, it's fine. But it's really, really wrecking the main events to keep him in there when the push is failing so badly like that, I think.
No, I agree too. And also about the pay-per-view length, the Orton Jericho highlight reel segment was very, very long. They could have shaved that few minutes off of that, I believe. It could have been half as long. We could have got the same effect from it, too.
I think if it had been earlier, it would have been fine. I just think for me, because, by that point in the show, it was a couple of hours into it, and, you know, I was just ready to be done. They had the matches before that. And I thought, okay, where we go? We've had a couple of women's matches now. It's time for the main event. But no, there was still a 20-minute interview segment to go. And really, it could have been moved to either the pre-show or Raw completely, I think.
And also, what about Bayley's debut? What do you think about that? Having a one-off deal and going back to NXT now.
Well, I mean, if they weren't going to make a big deal over in the draft, I think it's fine to do it that way then. I thought it was, like, the debut was awesome. I thought they weren't in a city that would be considered kind of a, you know, a Smart town or NXT friendly town necessarily. And I mean, she got a giant reaction. She came out, she did all of her normal Bayley comeback stuff. People were totally into it. They knew who she was. So, I mean, I think it was a huge success in that regard. She was booked to be protected. She didn't go out there and do a job or anything like that. At the same time, she didn't really take any of the shine off Sasha. So yeah, I thought it was really well done. And now she goes back to NXT looking like a bigger star at the moment, because, you know, she came out there and she looked like a star, and people now know her as a star, and probably she's going to go to TakeOver and win the women's title back again, which is, you know, it's nice. People will like it, and I'm glad for her, but going back to NXT kind of feels like demotion after this again. In the same sense, like, I mean, she went out there and obviously she was good for the main roster, and, you know, people liked her enough and knew who she was that she should have been back out there again. apparently the justification is that they don't want to, you know, take any of the focus off of Sasha and Charlotte leading up to SummerSlam, which is, you know, whatever. It's kind of a weird justification on their part, but, you know, fine. At least they have a reason for it, I suppose.
And also, what most people thought the match of the night was Kevin Owens versus Sami Zayn and their feud probably ending for now, but with both guys in the same roster on Raw. What's your takeaway on that about these guys? Are they going to meet up again soon, do you think? Do you think they might actually team up in the future?
I hope they do. They'd be an awesome tag team, as long as they're teaming on a brand that actually has the tag team titles. But, yeah, I think I mean, the match was great, obviously. I thought to start out with, it was like I wasn't feeling it at first. It was like a really slow Sami Zayn Kevin Owens match to start out with the chin locks and everything like that. And then obviously it got awesome near the end. But they were worrying me a little bit on there. I was thinking, oh man, they're, you know, because I'd heard that they had some house show matches leading up to this show, and kind of the takeaway from most people was that yeah, they just went out there and they had this kind of, they're sleepwalking through the match, right? Because they've had a billion matches together. But this one they ended up being great. Oddly enough, it was the botched moonsault on the ropes out there that ended up, you know, really setting the match on fire. Sami Zayn, total professional, you know, he goes out there. I don't know if he hurt his shoulder for real or not, but either way, he immediately told Owens to post him and start working over the shoulder, which is really cool touch, I thought, because, you know, these guys usually are so slavishly devoted to the script of the match that even if they go out there and break their leg, they're still not going to deviate from the plan. So that was really, really neat, I think, to go in there and work that in there. And, yeah, I mean, it was worked as a total just, you know, end of the feud match, right? I mean, Sami Zayn went out there, hit him with, you know, a pair of exploders and then gave him a pair of the kicks in the corner and pinned him clean in the middle. So you'd think that would be the end of it. Like, it was actually one case where if they did want to continue the feud, then, you know, a crappy finish almost would have been preferable in a lot of ways, but, you know, I'm never going to complain about getting a clean pinfall on pay-per-view like that. But yeah, it was fantastic. And, I think it does set up kind of for a tag team thing in the future because, like, obviously Kevin Owens, who's a fantastic wrestler and actor in his own right, was giving all these hints during the match that, you know, they used to be friends and possibly they're still that kind of kernel of friendship in his black heart that, you know, that someday that they could be friends again. And if only, you know, they'd stop fighting. And, I think tag team would be a fantastic proposition between them. And then the other theory I've heard thrown around is that they were going to do some kind of storyline where they're both on the same show and they keep fighting and being disruptive until finally they have to have another match at SummerSlam where the loser goes to SmackDown, which also would, you know, yeah, it's a great idea as well. But, you know, they have to, it wouldn't just be a loser leaves town match though. They'd have to actually make it so that there's such a disruption to the Raw show that, you know, that it has to be forcibly removed from it for it to work. I don't really necessarily have faith that they could pull that off, but I think that would actually be a beneficial thing to finally get them split apart like that.
And another big moment from the pay-per-view was Enzo Amore. That was quite the promo we had at the beginning of before this match. He had everybody cheering for him, including John Cena. What did you think about Enzo?
I think they must have cut Cena's time on that one because Enzo went so long. I don't know. I was accused of no-selling the promo and the rant, but, you know, that's not fair. Again, I should point out that it's more of the fact that the show was running very long for me that by that point, and I was just kind of in no mood to listen to the long promo. I mean, I enjoyed it. I thought it was really funny. Enzo can kind of read from the proverbial phone book and be an entertaining guy for whatever time that they throw him out there for. I've been quoting the "don't eat a banana, we'll look at another man in the eye" line for the last couple of days, so obviously that part stuck with me. But, you know, it's people didn't think that Enzo and Cass were going to go over on the main roster. I thought, you know, personally, that they'd come up from NXT and be opening match guys, which would have been fine. They would have been the greatest opening match guys in probably WWE history, I think. But they have plans for them, and they put them out there in that position with John Cena to be a big star. And I really think that Enzo and Cass pulled it off. Like they, Cass is kind of an underrated talker, I think, right now as well. He kind of held his own there with Enzo at the end. He, listening to Enzo's insanity, and then Cass actually played off it really well. Did his own kind of thing there with it too. And yeah, it was very. The match itself wasn't that great, I don't think, but the promo certainly, yeah. I mean, it's if only Enzo Amore had more wrestling talent, I think that he could turn the talking into something more positive. But he's just such a marginal guy in the ring, aside from taking a few big bumps and concussing himself, that I just don't know. Like I think that, you know, shifting him over into a managerial role and pushing Cass as the star of the team is probably kind of the most positive outcome, I should say, for the future, just because I think that's kind of the best use for Enzo. Just let him go out there and talk for the whole time there and be the big mouth that, you know, that everybody wants to beat up, and Kaz could be the muscle, and that's kind of an effective thing. Like, using Enzo kind of as the Ricky Morton face and peril thing is just, I just don't know if it's the best use for him, because you have to have be a really good worker to kind of do that, and Enzo's just not. He can take some good shots, but he's not kind of the high level worker and seller that somebody like a Ricky Morton or Shawn Michaels was to really make that dynamic work the best, I don't think.
Yeah, and I think I don't know how long Cass and Enzo will stay together for. Do you see them splitting off within the next year or so? I know Vince loves Cass.
Yeah, and
it's
no
secret.
Even during the match, JBL was already saying, "Oh yeah, Cass is going to be a big single star." It's like they've hardly even been a team for in the main roster for very long. Like, give him a chance here. But yeah, so it's obvious what the plans are for Cass. I mean, that's why I think it might be a positive thing to move Enzo into a managerial role kind of like right away to ease the pain of it. Because if they let them be a tag team for a long time and people really start to like it, it's just going to let people down when Enzo is not really pushed as a main guy as part of the team. And when Cass inevitably turns on him or gets turned on either way, then I don't know. It doesn't seem like it's going to be an effective way to go about it. You're building up people's hopes for something that I don't think is in their mind. Like I really don't see Enzo and Cass being pushed as a, you know, major tag team replacement for the New Day, especially because, you know, they're not even on the same brand now, right?
They're both on the same brand.
They're both on the same brand. Okay, well, all right, we'll take that back then. I can't keep track of this stuff anymore. This is what happens, Brian. I get old. I lose track of these rosters like that.
Yeah, these rosters, even I lose track of it half the time, too. And what else from the paper do you take away? Any other matches? I know they had.
Yeah, Miz is terrible. I don't hate him with the burning passion that a lot of people do, but God, that was the problem with that match was certainly not all Darren Young. I mean, Darren Young's not good or anything like that either. Don't get me wrong, but Miz is just, for somebody who's been Intercontinental Champion like a million times now, like he has, you'd think he would learn to work a better match with these guys. Like, it just, most of the match was spent, he got him in a headlock, he was yelling at Bob Backlund. And it's like, Miz is a great guy for doing the PR work and being in, you know, acting in their crappy movies and everything like that. But like, Jesus, in the ring, he should be better than he is for somebody in that position. Like, he's been around for a long time now. I look at where John Morrison is compared to where he is, and, you know, they both came up around the same time. And it's just, they're like night and day, and I don't know. It really, Miz's position right now really kind of bugs me, just because, you know, that was, it ended up being all this build for him getting the title, you know, and he had the four-way matches with, you know, Zayn and Owens and everything, and all these guys losing to him, and then that's the big payoff. He has this shitty match with Darren Young. And, you know, we're not even going to get the rematch that to build you up to it, because in this case, so I'm pretty sure they are on different brands, right? Miz is on SmackDown and Darren Young's on Raw.
Correct.
Right. So, yeah, we're not going to get the rematch out of it. So it was a terrible match with a bad finish.
And the finish was brutal. Oh, my God.
Like, I don't even know what the finish was supposed to be. Like, they both get counted out, even though they've been out of the ring for like 2 seconds. And Darren Young can't even do the crossface chicken wing properly.
That looked awful. That Young Backlund gimmick is not going to – I don't see that going on too much longer. That's really terrible. I mean, the vignettes were cute, but live and in person, it's – Jesus.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's guys that the Backlund thing can work with, but Darren Young is not one of them. I mean, especially because Darren Young doesn't really wrestle. That's not his thing. Like the whole idea with, you know, Backlund's trying to train a wrestler, like somebody like a Shelton Benjamin, that might work with Bob Backlund. Because, you know, Shelton's, you know, kind of a wacky guy. And obviously he's a high level, you know, actual amateur wrestler. So it kind of ties in with Backlund's whole deal. But like, yeah, like the Darren Young thing, I don't even know what Darren Young's character is supposed to be. He was, you know, formerly half of the Primetime Players, basically. How does that tie in with Bob Backlund? Why is Bob Backlund trying to make him great again? You know, I don't know what anybody's motivation in here is.
It really does. And it really also goes to show you that Young and O'Neill should just be together as a team as the Primetime Players. When they're both apart from each other, good things don't happen.
Yeah. Well,
they're a great act as a team, and the fans love their Millions of Dollars Dance, and they're entertaining. I think they're a great team together, but singles, it hasn't worked before, and it's not working now.
Yeah. Another thing I enjoyed from the pay-per-view actually was Rusev. He's tremendous, and I don't know. I feel like he's another guy who's kind of going to be wasted at SummerSlam. Like he's going to be way down the card there. He's been doing such great work. He has the best Twitter ever, especially when Mojo Rawley runs out like a crazy person, and Rusev just completely ignores him in the best way, and just walks away like he's not even worth the time, and then he goes on Twitter and talks about how this fan ran into the ring, right? And it's tremendous stuff. Like Rusev's so entertaining, and he's another guy who he's U.S. champion now, but he feels like totally like broken down from this whole League of Nations thing that wasted everybody's time. And he deserves a lot better. Like he should be, I feel like he should be higher up on the card. You know, he could have been like this whole thing going against, you know, people defending the honor of America. Like, does America really want honor defended by Zack Ryder? Like, is there not anybody better to defend standing up for America than that? I mean, there's tons of people out there who could stand up for America, I feel like, other than him.
Yeah, that's a feud that I think they're just killing time before the brand split went into effect. Because that's Zack Ryder. He had a bad night last night in SmackDown, the Battle Royal. He slipped off the top rope trying an elbow drop. I don't know if you saw a GIF of that at all. If you haven't seen the show.
Didn't see that, unfortunately.
That was bad. He also completely missed the drop kick to the back of Kalisto's head. So he had a bad night. But Rusev's a great talent. He's been underutilized for far too long. I hope they can just build him up for a while and find something good for him to do. He is very entertaining. He's great in the ring, too. He can hold his own with anybody in the ring.
Yeah. Like he's somebody – he seemed to learn a lot, actually, from the Cena feud, for one thing. I didn't think their matches were, like, lighting the world on fire or anything like that. But I thought, yeah, but Rusev made a lot of strides, and he's turned into a really good, solid worker. The adjustment of the accolade now where he leans all the way back to finish the guy now, I think that's tremendous. It's a nice touch on it. And I don't know what Lana did anymore, but she could have been a much more effective part of the act, and now she's become, you know, just come in the ring, introduce him, and then disappear for good, basically, which is kind of a shame.
Yeah, she's pretty much Ricardo Rodriguez now.
Yeah, she pretty much is.
She's a personal ring announcer.
Well, aside from the fact that Rodriguez can remember his own accent, but I mean, that's...
Yeah, that accent, it fades. Comes and fades.
Yeah.
You also had the pre-show match was the Breezango beating the Usos in a barn burner. What do you think about the Usos act? Is there any hope with them anymore? I mean, they seem like the stalest act on the roster at the moment.
They're a team that would have, in the old days, benefited from, you know, going somewhere else and, you know, finding a new act, basically. They would have gone to, like, the UWF or Crockett or something back in the 80s and been repackaged as, you know, the Samoan SWAT team or done a heel turn or something like that, right? Like, it's just they need to be turned. For one thing, ideally, what they need is their own personalities. So the other main problem that they kind of have as a team is that it's been a few years now. I still can't tell the difference between Jimmy and Jay. Like it's, but if they were going to get their own personalities, then you know they'd be split up. So it's kind of a catch 22 because once somebody, if one of them suddenly broke out more than the other, then that would be their first instinct would be to turn them into singles workers, because that's what they do. If a tag team's been around too long, they just split them up, because why not, right? But yeah, I think they kind of got a little unfairly maligned from the Roman Reigns heat as well. I think that was part of it. There was a period there when Roman Reigns was really getting destroyed by the fans, and they were sticking the Usos out there with him night after night as his backup, and just gave him the stink of Reigns on them, and kind of they've never really recovered from that, unfortunately. They need to maybe do like the Godwins or something and repackage them as like Samoan Justice with suits or something. I don't know.
Samoan Gangsta Party. Samoan
Gangsta Party. That's right. Well, they never really debuted the first time, so you know they could give it another go, I feel like.
Okay. Any other thoughts on Battleground? I think we covered all the matches.
Yeah, I think we pretty much covered all the stuff. And like I say, it was a good show. It wasn't something where I would consider it well worth your while to go out of your way to see or anything like that. You know, I mean, for the $9.99 I paid for the network, I got my money's worth out of it with Sami Zayn versus Kevin Owens. I think that one's worth seeking out. And, you know, everything else was entertaining enough. They got to get them down to 2 hours is the thing. Like, I know they're all about more content, but it's just too much now with the pay-per-views like that, especially like this week when they did, you know, 3.5 hour pay-per-view, 3.5 hour Raw, and then 2 hour SmackDown. And obviously the fan base got burned out by the time they got to SmackDown as it is.
How about Raw? I want to discuss Raw. You said you watch Raw this week.
Yeah, actually, I was watching it at work in the background. It was enough that I was able to hold my attention for the times that I was watching it. So that was good. I thought it was a pretty fantastic show, I have to say. It was one where I was watching it, and it really felt like I was watching something important for a change, which is nice. Usually, like I say, it's the times when I'm flipping past it, I never get the feeling that, oh, you know, if I'm missing this, then this is something that, you know, I'm going to regret. But no, every time I was turning onto it, something cool was happening. The first four-way match seemed like it was a really awesome match. From what I could tell, I haven't actually sat down and watched the whole thing in full, but it seemed like in the neighborhood of 4 stars when I was watching it.
That's what I gave it for, rating 4 stars. It was a great match. All four guys looked good in it, too. They all came out looking like threats. Rusev, Owens, Balor, he was fantastic as well in that match. I can't remember the fourth right now, but...
Yeah. I feel like...
Cesaro,
yeah. Yeah, I always forget him, too. I feel like that it almost would have been better not to draft Finn Balor, just because like he didn't come out on the draft show and get the big entrance and everything like that. It might have been better to debut as a surprise, but I mean that's kind of nitpicking. He certainly did look like a big star in the match, which was great. He was treated on equal footing with everybody else. He got to go over the U.S. champion clean with the coup de grace. I mean that was great treatment of him, and it made him a star in one go with that one.
The other big news on Raw was Sasha Banks winning the title from Charlotte. Another great match and a wonderful moment, too. Did you get to see that match?
Yeah, that one I watched mostly in some entirety. I've heard, I've heard other complaints that Sasha was a bit sloppy in it, whatever. I didn't really see it, but I mean, I wasn't standing there watching the thing the whole second by second like that. But I mean, I felt really invested in the match. Just nice. I didn't think they would actually do the title change there.
Yeah, I thought SummerSlam was when that was going to happen. I was shocked and I did it on Raw.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I thought that was actually kind of a clever way to, you know, build up more interest in the match like that, because, you know, we're watching, it's like, well, they're not going to do it here. We're just waiting for the screwy finish, whatever. And then she just won clean. And, you know, that was kind of tremendous. I really like the callback to Eddie Guerrero. You know, cheating to win, getting Dana Brooke thrown out, because anything that removes Dana Brooke from the match is always going to be a positive, I feel like. So that was pretty great.
Yeah, that was a wonderful one. I like that a lot. I think the match picked up after that, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so I thought it was a 4-star match as well. It wasn't, I don't think that's because of the commercial breaks and everything. I don't think it was necessarily on the super high level of the NXT TakeOver women's matches like they have been. But, I mean, for what it was on a TV match, absolutely fantastic. And, you know, great for Sasha Banks, especially because with Sasha in particular, with her celebration, she's somebody who really felt like was actually happy to win the title. And they treated it as a big deal, and Sasha treated it as a big deal, did all the interviews afterwards, you know, where she was in tears because she was so happy to win this title. And that's like such a pleasant change of pace from, you know, everybody treating it like a prop that they carry around with them to the airport. And it's somebody who the fans can really get behind, which is really weird because she was defined as, you know, super heel on NXT for all this time as the arrogant, you know, bitchy boss character that now all of a sudden she's an inspirational babyface. But I mean, good, you know, hey, I'm glad for her. She seems very happy in the role and, you know, somebody who's living out her dreams. So, you know, good for her. It was great.
And also Raw, they debuted a new look. The announcers table's now not at ringside. They have a new announce team of Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Byron Saxton, who I actually thought did a pretty decent job, all things considered, in the first show together.
Yeah, I thought Byron was decent. The main problem I have with him is that the same thing they had on NXT, which is that Corey Graves and Byron Saxton sound like exactly the same on commentary.
And I noticed that too a bit.
Like Corey Graves works better when he's with some geek who has a totally different kind of voice, I find. So it's a really strange decision to put him with Byron on the show like that. But I mean, it's good for Corey Graves. I'm really glad for him that he's getting a shot like this at the big time as an announcer. Because I didn't think he started great on NXT, but he really developed well. And I'm glad to see him getting his chance here like that.
And they also brought back the enhancement talent matches on the show with Sasha with Nia Jax beating a local worker in about a minute and a half, and then Braun Strowman. Do you see the Braun Strowman match with James Ellsworth?
Yeah, I gotta say I like the character stuff with Byron Saxton interviewing guys before and after the match like that. It's a really nice touch. That's kind of the way that, you know, you used to see it on, you know, world class TV and you know those sorts of shows. And it's always been an effective way. I mean, like, who knows? Maybe James Ellsworth will suddenly become a big star.
I think so.
Yeah, you know, it's
he had the look Ellsworth and everything. He was good.
He has the look. Yeah, absolutely. You know, hey, there's guys who are enhancement guys, and that's fine. Like, that's their job. World Championship Wrestling, they used to haul out all kinds of crazy pale white guys and throw them out there to get tossed around by the Road Warriors. And that was their job, and they made money off that, and everybody was happy. Not everybody has to be Roman Reigns, you know?
Exactly. And I thought Nia Jax, that was a good squash match with her, and Strowman looked better than he had in a while, too. But those two beating up on guys like that for a while is going to help them a lot, I think, in the long run.
Yeah, well, especially with Nia Jax, there's not really much more you can do with her right now. Like, you bring her in as a big monster, and then it's like, okay, well, who else is in the women's division, right? There's, like, Charlotte and Sasha and, I don't know, God knows who else on Raw. But after that, you know, once you get past the main two, then it drops off pretty quickly. And it's like, well, what's going to happen? Is Nia going to go out there and beat, like, I don't know who else is on there. Carmella's on SmackDown, I guess. Paige? I guess Paige is on Raw. Okay, so yeah. So you go out there and do Nia Jax against Paige. And then, you know, then what? So after Nia Jax beats up Paige 8 million times, then what do you do with her? So I think that's why it's great that they have, you know, these enhancement women out there. Because Nia Jax can go out there and squash the shit out of them for, you know, a couple of months and hopefully kind of get over in the same kind of way Ryback did. And then you've built up a new star over there. It used to be such simple booking, right? Like, it used to be, that's the way they used to do it. And then you didn't have to, you know, waste all your big matches on TV because you literally run out of things for them to do. Speaking of which, though, I wonder how regretful is Ryback that he burned his bridges now? You have to think, because he probably would have been a pretty big player on one of the shows right now.
Yeah, I mean, even someone like SmackDown could really use him on the show. Someone with some star power.
Yeah, and could have been Dean Ambrose against Ryback for the world title at SummerSlam.
I'm not positive. I think his contract expires in August, I believe, at some point.
Yeah, he's pretty much burned his bridges now.
Coming back.
I think they have basically cut him loose now at this point. Actually, Bad News Barrett, though, that's the guy who could have been. He could have definitely found a spot on SmackDown, I thought.
All right. And any other thoughts on Raw?
New Day thing was kind of stupid, but I don't know. I'm a little...
I agree with you on that. I thought the end was great. I thought Gallows and Anderson just beating the crap out of all the decorations and ripping the shirts
off.
They
got to find something for the club to do now, though, man. Like, it's just Gallows and Anderson have been just like going out there, and their whole thing has been like the guys who lose to John Cena over and over again. As I don't know. I'm kind of wondering if they're going to keep the titles on the New Day to push them past Demolition, or if they're just not even counting Demolition as Demolition's reign as a thing anymore. Because you'd think Vince would be petty enough to maintain his grudge against Bill Eadie and
I think Bill Eadie is also named in the concussion lawsuit too, if I'm not mistaken. So
yeah, so probably they'll be champions again for now. It really does feel though like New Day really needs to they really need to find somebody else for a while aside from the New Day as his champion, but. I don't know. The whole Wyatt feud didn't really work for me with the New Day. I didn't really understand the point of it. Didn't really understand the payoff. And they're funny guys, but it's time. I think it's time for they got to find somebody else as champions now.
I think it's time for Big E too to get a singles push. I think he's somewhere ready to bust out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like he's a guy that, well, assuming he quits doing that stupid spear.
Oh but, my I mean, god! Yeah, like, ooh, yeah, he's gonna break a neck one day.
Which is really weird because they gave him a big singles push to begin with, and then when they couldn't find anything else to do with him, and they stuck him in the New Day, and now he's over again and probably deserving of a singles push, and he's been trapped as part of a New Day for the past year. So,
and going back to the club too, like you mentioned before, splitting off Gallows and Anderson from Styles and the hottest heel act on the roster was pretty. That's a pretty bold move. So I don't know what the future's going to hold for the club.
Yeah, I don't know. Putting him with Finn Balor right away would kind of be strange because Finn Balor is such a natural babyface right now. And if they go out there and turn Finn, that would probably kind of kill him dead in the water. But I don't know, unless they have some other – they said the club is expanding, so unless AJ is going to recruit other people at SmackDown for
They could also do something at SummerSlam when Reigns helps Rollins win and the club backs up Balor and you have a Shield club thing. They could do that.
They could do that too,
direction.
Yep, absolutely. I think Reigns and Rollins reuniting as the kind of like the heel Shield is definitely not the worst idea. You know, I think there's all kinds of interesting ways that they can go with it. Other than that, trying to see what else was on Raw here. I think that was about it. I really like the Finn Balor Roman Reigns match a lot too. Like, Roman can hold his own in those kind of matches.
Yeah, Roman can wrestle. That's not the problem whatsoever. A lot of people bash him for that. I don't know what they're watching. He can wrestle fine. It's just the character aspect is crap.
Yeah, I mean, I've never given Roman crap really for his wrestling. I mean, he goes out there and he brings in big matches. But yeah, the problem is the character. The problem is I don't relate to the character and I don't like the character. And it makes it hard for me to enjoy his matches, even if they are technically good.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Okay, welcome back. We are back on the Podcast of Doom here with your host, myself, Scott Keith. Hope, the owner and creator of blogofdoom.com, along with my compadre, Brian Bayless. And Brian, what's up next?
Oh, we have a classic. We have the 1999 Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view.
Oh, yes. I made the mistake of ordering that one back in the day. It's... back when I had much more disposable income and time on my hands and a lot more alcohol in my fridge. And let me tell you, I certainly got my $20 worth out of that one.
The alcohol.
To be fair, though, yeah, well, the card looked better in advance. Like, they actually, they're advertising all kinds of things like, you know, Legends segments, and Gordon Solie was supposed to be hosting the show. And I think the original match order looked better than it turned out to be. But yes, that one turned out to be certainly an all-timer. Have you watched it recently?
I tried a half hour and I fell asleep. I was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life, I think. The production values were horrible. It looked like it was filmed in the dark, for crying out loud. And they had Dutch Mantel as one announcer, and some guy, Randy Rosenblum, I think, was the other one. And my Christ, Rosenblum. What did he do before this? He was the worst.
Yeah,
the absolute
worst. Rosenblum was originally supposed to be Gordon Solie, and he pulled out basically at the last minute. So I believe Rosenblum was involved with the arena somehow, and they just threw him in there without knowing anything really about wrestling. And it was not a good scene.
It was held in the mecca of entertainment known as Bay St. Louis, Mississippi, at the Casino Magic. I can run down the card here. The Samoan SWAT team of Samu and the Samoan Savage, who was formerly Tama or the Tonga Kid in WWF, defeated Marty Jannetty and one half the Fantastics, Tommy Rogers. What do you think of that match?
Well, rest in peace, Tommy Rogers. But that was supposed to be I think that was actually supposed to be the Fantastics, if I'm not mistaken, that were in there, and they ended up swapping out, and Bobby Fulton no-showed or something along those lines. That was one where I was looking forward to it, and ended up being a train wreck. At the time, I thought, because they're twin brothers, I actually got Fatu confused with his brother, Samoan Savage, Tama. But they were both pretty fat by that point.
Oh, anyway, Tama, I thought, was someone who had great potential, too, and he was just bloated here, absolutely. He looked like Yokozuna did when he was in the WWF in 93. He was so big.
Yeah, I know. Boy, the more stuff I read about Tama and the old Observer flashbacks, the more I'm surprised he actually made it into the business the way he did, because that man had some personal problems.
He did.
Yes. But, it was – I thought it was, you know, not the worst opener that I've ever seen. Marty Jannetty, at least back then, was still, like, you know, a halfway decent worker. Tommy Rogers wasn't quite a total train wreck yet. The Samoan SWAT team, though, God, they were just – that was they were a bad choice to put out there in an opener. They weren't going to be – you know, running around with the Rockers or anything like that. And, it was not terribly terrible. It wasn't anything special either, I thought. But not a really great start to the show or anything like that.
Then after that, we had Greg the Hammer Valentine against George Steele, managed by Sensuous Sherry, who is Sherry Martel.
Yeah.
These two had a killer house show feud in 88 in the spring where they tore it up in the second match of the card every night. I used to watch some of those shows. And they wrestled here. And what did you think of this one? Because I saw this and...
Yeah, it was... that was another one, I think, that where the booking changed in advance. It was supposed to be Valentine against somebody else and ended up being George Steele. I had it at -3 stars in the original rant, which sounds about right to me. George Steele is not the guy to get something out of Greg Valentine, and vice versa. Sherry Martel was just a total wreck by that point as well, with her WCW career being over. And Greg Valentine, though, was amazing. It's, you know, 2016, and you look at him now, and he still looks the same as he did back then, even. So he's got to be doing something right, I think, because he's possibly some kind of android. I don't know.
Yeah, that man doesn't age in the face. He looks the same.
But yeah, the match itself was pretty horrible. Not the worst of the night, of course. You know, -3 stars is nothing compared to what would come later, but not a good go either.
After that, we had two legends. Julio Fantastico, if people don't know who that is, it's Julio De Niro from ECW. I think he was with Easy Money, I believe, towards the end of ECW, as Hot Commodity. Was
that's
that
right,
the
yep.
team?
Mm-hmm.
Went up against Too Cold Scorpio and his fake NWA belt, whatever he's carrying with him. I don't know what that belt was.
I have no idea. It's been explained to me later, but I didn't really pay attention. But that was another one where it was like, well, it first of all, it violated the whole point of the show because neither of them were heroes or legends. And it wasn't really a great match or anything like that either. I mean, it was just, you know, it was an okay match, I suppose.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was just didn't need to be on the show at all, I thought. However, the next match.
Oh,
that's the one.
Oh,
that's
boy.
The money.
The Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov against Luke and Butch, who could not be called the Bushwhackers here. This match, I went back and saw this today because I had it. It was so bad. It legitimately could be the worst wrestling match I've ever seen in my life.
Quite possibly. Dave Meltzer really, really hated this match when it went out there. So I only gave a -4 stars.
You're kind.
I got
-5.
Yeah?
Well, this was that bad to me.
It was pretty bad. I haven't watched it recently or anything like that, but yeah, I remember it was pretty terrible. Like I say, Meltzer just completely destroyed it, and the Observer at the time is just – Nikolai Volkov was falling apart at that point. I mean, even after his 1994 comeback, he looked terrible, and this was 5 years after that. Iron Sheik, of course, is always a train wreck waiting to happen. And I suppose there could have been some entertainment value involved in it, just being with how bad it was, but they couldn't even do that right. It's just old and slow and ridiculous and couldn't hit anything properly. And just bad in all the wrong ways, basically.
Then after that, we had Tully Blanchard against Stan Lane.
Yeah, that was another one where, you know, again, Stan Lane looked decent considering, but, you know, Tully hadn't wrestled in a long time, and they're just out there collecting a paycheck and did a match. Could have been, I don't know, could have done something a lot more interesting with it, I think, but there was one involved where somebody was, where Sherry was being kidnapped. I think that might have been the George Steele one. I don't know.
Yeah.
There was one where they had a wacky storyline going in the background too that referred, but yeah, it was just, I feel, you know, poor Tully, just, he's probably the one out there who was like the most professional of anybody in the show and just, you know, getting stuck out there in the strain wreck in the middle of it.
Ugh. Yeah, most people seem to think this was the best match of the show, actually.
Yeah, I think it was that one. I think it was one coming up with Bob Orton that was also, you know, not terrible.
And the next match was Abdul the Butcher versus the One Man Gang.
Yes, another classic one. I don't know who even want to get in the ring with Abdullah the Butcher even at that point. I mean, by then, I think everybody knew that he was, you know, hepatitis positive, and it was, you're kind of taking your life into your own hands, getting in there and bleeding with him like that. But yeah, another terrible one. I've never really seen the appeal on Abdullah the Butcher, and One Man Gang was, of course, a total shell of himself by that point.
All right. Up next was the Jimmy Snuka versus Cowboy Bob Orton Jr. match.
Yeah, that was the one I'd say, you know, people thought was probably the best match of the show. It was, you know, halfway decent. To be honest, I was really drunk by that point anyway. So, you know, I didn't really care. But, yeah, it's there was, I guess, some slight heat to the match. The crowd kind of halfway cared about both guys. But I had a whopping 1.25 stars as the best match of the night back then.
And then after that, we had, oh boy, Jake the Snake Roberts had an interview.
Yes, a legendary interview.
Holy shit.
I feel like I should have a soundboard here and play bites of it for people who haven't seen it to truly appreciate it.
Yeah, if you haven't seen this, it's probably on YouTube. The whole show's on YouTube, actually, but just you can seek out this interview. There'll never be anything like this today ever on a live wrestling event. What do you think about this interview personally?
It was pretty sad. It was by that point that I realized exactly what I'd got myself into by watching the show, I think. Like the interview about the Blackjack. I was get 22 or something like that, I think was what he was the famous line that he threw out there on that one. But yeah, he was literally, you could tell he was literally like staggering around. He wasn't able to center on the camera because he was just completely bombed out of his mind. It was just pretty sad more than anything, I think.
And then what was built, wasn't this built as a double main event. It was Bundy versus Yokozuna, then Neidhart versus Roberts.
Yeah, that was
a tag match.
Ended up being a tag match. Jake was obviously in no condition to compete, so they kind of threw him together as a tag match to hopefully save the show. Didn't work. Yokozuna was way past the point when he should have been in the ring at all at that point as well. And, yeah, just total train wreck. And Jake Snake, of course, famously using his snake as a giant penis. And everything that could go wrong did go wrong, basically. When Jim Neidhart is looking like the sane professional in the match, then you know you're watching something truly epic.
Oh, man. Neidhart was pathetic in WCW before that, too, when he was in that run.
Mm-hmm.
Davey Boy, they were both. It was the worst I've ever seen both of them ever.
I think, and the really bad thing about it too was, as I noted in the rant was that, you know, this is supposed to be a family show. Like they gave tickets to kids and stuff and put them out there, and you know, here's Jake Roberts out there, you know, waving his snake around in front of them. And even before that, you had the Abdullah the Butcher match where both guys are bleeding all over each other. It's just really weird, misguided booking the whole thing. However, 15 years later, Jake Roberts is still alive, so. Got to give him that.
Yeah, I think after this ended, it was actually talk about doing another Heroes of Wrestling pay-per-view at one point, I believe, but never came to fruition.
They were talking about it almost as soon as the show ended, in fact, and then the buy rate came in, and they realized they didn't have any money to do it.
So that was that show, which is something you can see on YouTube if you want to watch now.
I'm sure everybody would want to watch. It's beautiful.
Beautiful show. You can get it for free. You don't have to pay $19.99 for that. So that's good at least. But would you say that is the worst pay-per-view of all time?
It's certainly the one that's had that reputation, absolutely. For me personally, I've seen ones that I've disliked more in the moment, but they didn't really stick with me. Like there's a lot of really bad WCW ones and ones from like that weird Australian company that I saw that were kind of terrible, but then I forgot about. But Heroes of Wrestling was a special kind of bad where I actually was able to remember the terribleness afterwards and sticks with me. And, you know, the fact that people still look up Jake Roberts' promo on YouTube is kind of a testament to the great badness of it, I guess. So, yeah, I'd say it's pretty much earned its position as the worst pay-per-view of all time. So now I guess we can hit the mailbag a little bit here with my never-ending stream of questions that I'm going to hear.
Excellent.
I'll fire through some of these here. You chime in whatever you want.
Great.
Let's see here. Shorter ones. Oh, here we go. Okay. So this one's this person says, ignoring the fact that WWE hasn't made it known whether or not the champions will run both shows or if new titles will be created, at least they had the good sense to keep established teams together, unlike the 2002 split where it seemed like every team was split up. Was there a plan to do away with the tag team division as we knew it, or were they really intent on pushing guys like Bubba and Bradshaw without the thought of what is replacing these teams? Beyond Chuck and Billy, there was nothing for months, and it seemed like they were just throwing random guys together for the hell of it. Yes, in fact, I can answer this one. In fact, yes, they were trying to kill off the tag team division, is what I had heard at the time, in fact, that Vince McMahon was, much like Eric Bischoff before him in WCW, Vince's plan was that they break up all the tag teams and get rid of the tag team titles, and that was the direction that they wanted to go. So you had things like Bubba's singles push and Bradshaw's singles push and Deacon Batista and all that good stuff. Did you enjoy Bubba's singles push in 2002?
Oof. I remember he confronted Triple H about this being the Triple H show. That's all I remember from that run. And then we had Preacher Devon.
Yes, Preacher Devon. Yes, the Reverend Devon.
Which gave us
Batista. So that was there was that positive out of it, at least. But, yeah, they got really tag team split happy, I thought, at the time. And so that was their goal. It didn't work out. Instead, we ended up with two sets of tag team titles. So, you know, way to go out of that, I suppose. But, that's what they were shooting for. Next one. Person asks, hey Scott, with Tessa Blanchard floating around NXT, what do you think the odds are that Charlotte puts together her own four horsewomen? Any other kids available from the originals? And then obviously Bailey will make a great Sting who never fails to fall for Charlotte's ruses. Well, I think actually we've shown that Becky Lynch is a much bigger idiot than Bailey is here. as far as falling for stuff. So she'd probably be the one who would fit into the Sting role there.
Even the announcers make a point though about that every single telecast.
Yeah, when even the announcers clue into the fact that you're stupid, then you're kind of in trouble, I think, as a character. So there's Tessa Blanchard, there's Charlotte. No, I don't think Arn Anderson had any kids that I know of that are going into business. Ole Anderson's kids are already actually far past the point where they're in wrestling. I guess you can stretch it and have like Lacey Von Erich.
I think she quit the business, didn't she?
I guess.
She was briefly around TNA for like a few months or something, didn't she?
Yeah.
Heard of her in a while.
Well, I don't really know who else they would have that. So I don't know. Yeah, that's Lex Luger didn't have any. I don't think Lex Luger had kids.
Oh, Paul Roma.
Paul Roma. He might have. Yes. That would really be stretching at that point. Barry Windham. Well, obviously, well. Barry Windham didn't have daughters. I don't think. Well, all right. Well, I don't know. I think our four horsewomen idea is dead in the water. Then, unfortunately.
Sadly.
Sadly. All right. All right. Oh, here we go. This person has an idea for the Cruiserweight division. What if they made the first hour of Raw almost in a roundabout way a separate brand in and of itself? What I mean by that is devote the entire first hour to be exclusively to the Cruiserweight division. It would, of course, still be called Monday Night Raw, but maybe give it the feel of the first hour like its own separate thing. The announcers could refer to it as the rush hour and say it's the fastest hour on television with fast-paced action. And it takes off like that Cruiserweight tag title. So come on, let's not get ahead of ourselves here. You get the division over by making it seem important. We're basically cutting the normal Raw antics. Maybe even give it its own GM to further differentiate the 3 hours. I don't know. I've had a lot of people suggest that they do something different with the first hour or make it a separate show or like NXT brand or whatever. And it's just, I just don't see USA doing that. Like if USA wanted to cut it to 2 hours, and do something else, they would, and they never have. Like, the whole idea is that USA doesn't want to lose those ratings, and if they put a Cruiserweight hour, then it's pretty much guaranteed to drop down there. So I don't see it happening. I think something like the Cruiserweight thing is just too much of a niche product. It would have fit better with SmackDown, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree with the Cruiserweights on SmackDown, and that first hour of Raw, they're not going to rock the boat too much, so nothing drastic's going to happen. They'll maintain status quo as far as that's concerned. This Cruiserweight division actually being on Raw did surprise me. It still kind of does. SmackDown would definitely benefit from that at the moment. But no, we're not going to have a Cruiserweight hour and a Cruiserweight tag division either.
Yeah. They came and decided to do the regular tag team titles, and now they're going to add a Cruiserweight tag team title? I don't think so. There was a point when I thought it would have been okay to add a women's tag team title, actually, but now that they've split that division in half, that would be kind of pointless as well, I think. All right, last one here, I think. This person asks, I finally got around to watching The Wrestler, and I thought it was great. Mickey Rourke definitely earned his Oscar nomination. What did you think of it? Any clue how Vince or others in WWE reacted at the time it came out? Yeah, I can tell you Vince hated it. He freaked out. He thought it was going to destroy the business, I think is the main thing that he was thinking of there. And I think it was only around WrestleMania when he needed a celebrity, and he finally decided to forgive Mickey Rourke and bring him out to cash in on it. But a lot of people in the business thought that movie exposed things that I didn't really want exposed. I loved it myself. I thought it was great. I thought it really got the wrestler mentality. Like there was a lot of like moments like where they're playing Nintendo, and you know Mickey Rourke's like oh, I put you over and now you put me over. Right, like it's, you know, it's just they really, really understood how a wrestler thinks. And you know, you had Marissa Tomei as a stripper, so that's always a bonus as well. Any thoughts on the movie, Brian?
Yeah, I enjoyed the movie a lot. A lot of dynamics going on. He just, you know, a guy who was a former wrestler, couldn't give it up, couldn't give up the spotlight no matter what, even though he's probably going to kill himself doing it. And a good dynamic with the daughter too, I believed. I liked that a lot. It was a great movie in itself. Even not a wrestling fan, I still enjoyed the movie a lot for what it was. The wrestling was the main component of it.
Yeah, the story, it's pretty universal story, right? Like the guy who used to be the big star and then now he's working at a deli and he gets one last shot kind of thing. Yeah, it's like, it doesn't have to be unique to wrestling in order to enjoy it. So yeah, that was really well done too, I thought. All right. Well, if no further thoughts on that, then I think we have come to the end of the debut episode of Scott's Podcast to Doom. Thanks to Justin Rosero and the rest of the folks at Place to Be Nation for putting up with us here and giving this a go. And Brian, any last thoughts here before we wrap it up tonight?
You guys can check out my work here in Place to Be Nation. I review Raw and SmackDown. And also on Scott Keith's blog at Doom, I do a variety of reviews. You can read that, and there's probably something I posted on it every day. So go right ahead, take a look. Any feedback, you can send me right to me there, or I think I have an email address now here on Place to Be Nation as well. I'm on Twitter too. It's Mr. Bayless 1982. I'm not much of a tweeter, but I'm going to start getting back into that a little bit. So you can reach me anywhere, and I'll get back to you.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, everybody, for listening to the first show, and we will see you again sometime.